The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
I'm putting you on the spot, Anthony Reich. Any idea?
I actually don't know. I was thinking about it, but I've no idea, to be honest.
All right, so taking a look at some of the answers. David Zimmerman says Phil Mickelson. Karen says Phil Mickelson. So does Ian, and that is indeed the answer.
I would not have guessed, I have to tell you. I mean, I do watch a bit of golf from time to time. I'm not a big player, but I do watch from time to time. That comes as a surprise. And what's more of a surprise, am I the only one who feels disappointed that there wasn't a good quote today from Dr. Myberg?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, Nabuchle is saying, actually, now that you mention it. I suppose he thought he was sort of deep enough without the quote today. And
well, it was very deep, but I feel a little disappointed now. I'm so used to his very, very profound quotes. So I was hoping to hear one, I have to tell you.
I'm going to message him and tell him that that you're very disappointed in it. Maybe I won't do that. Let's just talk about what's going on in Israel. This is, I think, a very significant move, and that is that the fact that Likud member of Knesset, Gideon Sa'ar, has announced that he is leaving Likud and will form his own party to compete with Prime Minister Netanyahu for the Prime Minister position at the next election. Was this expected? My feeling is that we should have anticipated this. I think this might make the difference. What do you think?
Well, it's very, very hard to assess at this stage. I think it is certainly an interesting move. We know that Gideon Sa'ar for some time has not been particularly happy in Likud. Likud for him, I think, is a home. I think that there are many people who are dyed-in-the-wool Likudnikim from back in the day, people who really felt very comfortable in Likud, who under the current circumstances, with the current leadership, don't feel comfortable. And Gideon Sa'ar is certainly one of them. And he did compete with Prime Minister Netanyahu at the previous opportunity, at the previous primary that was held already quite some time ago, leadership primary, where he was very significantly beaten. This was back actually not so long ago, almost about a year ago now, where he was beaten by 72.5% to 27.5%. So, I mean, that's kind of not even really close. But when we look at how the Likud operates and who those are who are entitled to vote, we can see a very, very strong influence by Prime Minister Netanyahu over everything that goes on the Likud, and a certain amount of fear, I suppose, because people that he's going to continue to be the leader for at least the foreseeable future, and therefore people have to be seen to support him, because if you don't support him, then you are out. You are really out. And we saw that yesterday. As soon as Gideon Sa'ar announced that he's going to form a new party, the Likud machine turned on him like you could just see it coming down the hill. You know, the press, you know, people criticizing Sa'ar, it's only because he failed to win any support at the last leadership election and he wasn't able to get a position in the government. And this is sour grapes. And, you know, the machine turned on him in a very, very significant way. We also should remember that he's not the first person to try this idea of leaving Likud and forming their own party, none of whom have succeeded up until now. The person who most comes to mind is Tzipi Livni. I mean, she was a former Likudnik. Her parents were dyed-in-the-wool Likudnikim, you know, from the founding of the state of Israel. She left the Likud. She formed her own party. She even had some success or limited success. But ultimately, it all just died and faded away into oblivion. We didn't hear from them again. I mean, even late Prime Minister Arik Sharon took his people away, formed his own party, succeeded with his party, governed, was prime minister, and the party simply just disappeared into nothing.
It's so interesting, Anthony, because it's so similar to here with the ANC. We've got this, Nabuchle, we were just saying, like, it's the ANC, we have these breakaways of powerful people, but yet somehow it just doesn't gather the momentum.
Right. It just doesn't materialize. And so, you know, the problem for Gideon Sa'ar is that on the one hand, I think he will get a lot of support from people who are just tired of the way in which Prime Minister Netanyahu is choosing to exercise his leadership at the moment. So I think that Sa'ar will certainly get the support of those people who are on the right wing of politics but don't want to support Likud. The Prime Minister will call them all left-wingers. Anybody who doesn't support him is a left-winger. It doesn't matter where you fall on the political spectrum. So he will get their support. The problem for Gideon Saar is that he doesn't have the same presentation skills. He doesn't, you know, present in the same way. Even yesterday when he held the press conference, there was just a certain lack of ring about it. And some people are saying, well, it's because there wasn't an audience because of COVID. But it just... he just doesn't have the same skills as Prime Minister Netanyahu does. When he stands up in the public, when he stands up in front of the TV, he could absolutely sell anything in the world to people who are non-believers, and they would buy it because he just has the gift of the gab and he has that skill to make presentations. So as much as we want to believe in Gideon Saar's integrity, because I think he has integrity, he is believable, he's taking a few people along with him, including Likud member of Knesset Yifat Shasha Biton, who was very famous for chairing the COVID committee and then was promptly sidelined when she was seen to be acting too much in the interests of public health and too little in the interests of the Likud and the Prime Minister, and she was then pushed to the side and we haven't heard much from her since then. And one of the interesting things about Gideon Saar is that he currently sits as a Likud member of Knesset, and he's decided to form his own party, which doesn't require him to resign his Knesset seat in the Likud. He can actually stay on in the Knesset even as a non-member of the Likud right now. But he's decided, by the way, if he had joined another party, which is already sitting in the Knesset, he would be required to resign his seat. But under the current circumstances, he's not. And yet he's decided that he will do, I guess, because life would be very, very difficult for him to continue as a member of Knesset. But also, looks like there's a bit of integrity involved that he doesn't want to continue to ride on the coattails of the Likud. I think it's an interesting move. I don't know that it's going to be a political bomb in the next election. We still don't have a date for the next election. It looks like it will likely be the 16th or the 23rd of March. That's what we're guessing. I don't think that this is going to make a substantial difference. The problem is that we already have too many political parties out there anyway, and it's very, very difficult for a small country like ours to cope with so many political parties. It just weakens everybody, and it just weakens the government and potentially brings a lot of strength to those kingmakers who are prepared to join the government almost at any price, but obviously have the price that they will extract. I don't know that this makes a massive difference to the way in which the Prime Minister will perform in the next election, but it's an interesting move nonetheless.
It is, and I actually think it will make a difference, but it'll be interesting to see either way. The government has stepped back from the idea of a night curfew in the upcoming week. So yesterday we spoke about this. What happened now?
Well, there's lots and lots of mixed messages coming through, as I said yesterday. In the first instance, you know, all school children return back to school this week for frontal classes. Everybody is now back at school. And in addition to that, not only has the government decided to continue the pilot of opening some malls, but in fact, as of today, I think all malls will be open. So that's kind of on a reopening basis, which I think is really good for our economy. On the other hand, they wanted to implement this night curfew over a period of 3 weeks, which I think was designed to cover Hanukkah, which of course starts later this week, the Christmas period for the Christians who might be celebrating, and the New Year period, which of course is celebrated quite substantially by many of the Russian community in Israel. And so I think the idea was to extend that night curfew over 3 weeks to try to prevent all of these parties from going on and the potential for people infecting each other. As we understand things, the government has decided to step back from this. And the reason seems to be because there was going to be a challenge to this in the court system, and the indications from the legal system is that they would not be able to uphold the government's decision to go into a night curfew. And so it would effectively be unenforceable. And on that basis, if the Supreme Court would not support this particular notion. There seemed to be no point in going forward with it. So that seems to have now been put to one side. And we are continuing as we are at the moment without any changes having been made yet to our setup. The meeting that was due to have been held yesterday by the coronavirus cabinet, in fact, wasn't held. And we expect that they probably will convene today to decide what is next on the agenda. But of course, now there's a lot of focus on the vaccines. Some of those vaccines due to be arriving today, the main ceremony tomorrow. The first vaccinations due to be administered in Israel on the 20th of December. The date has now been set, and the healthcare workers are due to get their vaccinations beginning on the 20th of December. It seems as if though there will be enough vaccinations at the first stage for around 500,000 to 600,000 people. So I guess that will cover the healthcare workers. And then of course more vaccinations to come after that. So that seems to be a lot of the focus right now. But of course it doesn't mean that people can just go wild and pretend as if though COVID doesn't exist anymore, because even though those vaccinations will be rolled out, I think that it's not going to affect enough members of the general public to say, look, we can relax all the rules. So it's going to be interesting to see how things progress during this intervening period where some people are vaccinated and many people are not vaccinated, and yet we still need to be very, very cautious in what we do.
Absolutely. A case concerning a non-Orthodox conversion to Judaism that has been in the court system for the last 15 years is due to be ruled on in the near future. Wow. Tell us about the case.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very, very interesting case because we've had, you know, already for the longest time, many, many challenges to the chief rabbinate in Israel who has control over all things halachic and all things Jewish. They decide upon, you know, who can get married to whom if you don't have the right documentation. There are many, many implications for the rulings that the chief rabbinate brings down. And one of the things that the chief rabbinate has control over is conversions to Judaism in Israel. So if you come along to Israel, you are not Jewish and you wish to convert to Judaism, then you will only be recognized as Jewish if your conversion is done under the auspices of the chief rabbinate. At least that was the rule until 2015 when, 2016, when a case was brought to the High Court of a person who did an Orthodox conversion by a non-state Orthodox rabbinical court, and they were not recognized for the law of return. And that's where the significance comes into our legal system rather than the religious system, because you're entitled to claim citizenship under the law of return if you can prove that you are Jewish, or at least that one of your grandparents is Jewish. So that includes people who convert to Judaism. They also are entitled to claim citizenship under the law of return. And then comes the question as to how do we recognize those conversions? And so I return to my original point that in Israel up until 2016, those conversions were governed only by the chief rabbinate. In 2016, the court ruled that somebody who had been converted by a non-state rabbinical authority should be recognized for the law of return. And then we have this much broader discussion, which has been in the court since 2005, about those people who are converted in Israel, non-Orthodox, so by the Mizorti conservative community or by Reform, are they recognized for the law of return? Up until now, they have not been. The courts are now finally, after 15 years, expected to rule on this point. And the indications are that the court is going to decide that the chief rabbinate's control is gone, and that even conservative and reform conversions will be recognized for the purposes of granting people citizenship under the law of return.
That's very, very significant, isn't it? I mean, that changes a tremendous amount. I mean, the repercussions of this are enormous, surely.
I haven't really considered how wide the repercussions really are. I mean, let's start by saying that this concerns only conversions in Israel. Up until now, people have come from abroad to take up citizenship in Israel who have been converted abroad are under different rules. Those rules are separate from what goes on here. But there are certainly a good number of people who come from abroad, non-Israeli citizens. Many of them come to kibbutzim. Many of them, you know, take up, you know, lives within Israel. And then while they're here, go through the processes of conversion. And so it really affects those people more than anything. And I think it's more of a statement about the control that the chief rabbinate has in Israel rather than really affecting the lives of numerous people. I mean, clearly it'll affect people's lives, that we can have no doubt about that. The question as to how many lives will be affected is not that clear to me, but I think it's more about a very, very profound political statement about the position of the chief rabbinate in our society.
Yep, it really does. I think, as you say, maybe it's just really about the statement that it makes. Anthony, it is 8 o'clock. This is where we love and leave you. This is my last show of 2020, so I'm going to catch you back in January when I return. I wish you a fantastic December, a Chanukah Sameach. Be safe, be healthy, and I'll catch you on the other side.
Enjoy your holiday. Good luck.